Matthew chapter 5, again, the Lord's preaching the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew told us what Jesus said, Matthew 5 through 7. It's the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew's a Jew writing to Jews about their Jewish Savior, their Jewish Messiah. And he was not the one that they, the type that they expected, but he was the one they were expecting, even though they didn't realize it. And Jesus has been dealing with anger. You remember he said, thou fool, and Raca. Verse 23 continues that thought. It says, therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar, and go thy way, and first be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift. To these verses we hear of often, I suppose. But Jesus is still dealing with the thing of anger. He's talking about the damage that anger can do. And the worst damage it can do is the fact that it can hinder worship. It's one thing for us to be mad at each other, whether it's family or just Christian family or anybody else. That does damage, it does harm to the body, it does harm to individuals. But when it comes to the fact that it's harming our walk with the Lord, he said, if we come to church, we'll put it in today's words. If we come to church and realize that we have ought in our heart towards somebody else, we are to go to them first. We're not even to try to worship in this setting. It's an offering, a gift, or an offering. And he lets us know that evil of any sort should be dealt with immediately and severely. And the reason, of course, is if we don't, it'll worsen. But even if it doesn't get worse, it's bad enough. If he says it's important enough to you stop, don't worship me, don't pray to me, don't sing a song to me, first you go and get it settled, that's pretty important. That's bad enough as it is. Now, in these verses, he's dealing with, if I realize there's someone who has an ought against me, and he says, I am to go to that person. Later on in Matthew 18, he deals with, if I realize someone has an ought against me, also I'm to go to that person. So it seems as though the Lord is saying, whoever realizes there's a problem, or whoever has the issue or the problem. One person may say, are you kidding? I didn't even know there was an issue. I didn't even know you was upset. I thought everything was fine. The other person says, are you kidding me? This bothers me. You said this, or you did that, or you didn't do the other. So Jesus says, whoever is bothering, whoever can't put it aside, whoever can't, well, I'll use the word forget, that person is to go. And certainly does not mean we're to discuss every single issue. Man alive, we'd be discussing 24 hours a day. There's some things we ought to just say, who cares? Not important enough to be bothered with. It's not important enough to even think about, discuss. I'm not burdened about this. It doesn't trouble me. Even though somebody may have wronged me, it's not that big a deal. That really ought to be our attitude. But he says, if you cannot have that attitude, if either one of them or both of them cannot have that attitude of, oh, good gracious, that's not enough to worry about. He said there needs to be, in humility, a discussion. The rule of thumb, I suppose, is this. If it bothers a person so much that they can't just pray about it and forget it, and it really be behind them, there needs to be a discussion. A godly, pre-prayered discussion. Where the person that goes prays before. Verse 25, he broadens the thing of anger. He says, agree with thine adversary quickly, whilst thou art in the way with him. Lest at any time the adversary deliver thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the officer, and thou be cast into prison. More than likely, the casting in the prison here, and the whole issue is, it's probably an unpaid loan or something like that. And most people that I've read after, and I agree, think that this is a debtor's prison. In that day, they had enough sense to know how to handle things like this. If somebody couldn't pay a bill, they didn't file bankruptcy. They didn't just say, well, I'm just sorry, that's just tough, or things like that. They didn't write it off. They sent that person to a prison of sort where they could work and earn the money to pay the bill. That's kind of smart as far as I'm concerned. And that's what Jesus is saying. And he's saying, if there's an issue, if there is a problem, your adversary, that person that somehow you've wronged, or there's something between you, you settle it as quick as you can. Get it settled. If you don't, they may just take you to court, and if you go to court, you may be found guilty, and if you're found guilty, you're going to go to prison, so it'd be a whole lot better trying to get it settled. You try and work it out between you. He's talking here about anger and how it is needed. It's important to deal with it as quickly as can, and as if you can, as calmly as you can, without any more disruption than is possible or necessary. Verse 26, verily I say unto you, unto thee, thou shalt, let me get my nose here where I can see. Well, I want our old light bulbs back. I'm going to have to call the electrician. Verily I say unto thee, thou shalt by no means come out thence till thou hast paid the uttermost farthing. What he's saying is, if you had just settled it and maybe swallowed your pride a little bit, and just admit it to the person, I know I've failed you, and I know I haven't done what I promised, but I want to show you that I want to get this settled. He said, if you'd done that, you probably could have worked it out, but if you don't, it's just going to, you're going to pay. And if you pay, you'll pay the total amount. You'll pay severely. And then Jesus moves to the comparison of the Old Testament and the New about adultery. He deals with the law and adultery beginning in verse 27. Now, I hope you understand what we're talking about. Jesus is preaching a message. And he's preaching a message about different subjects. And he just moves from one subject to the other. He doesn't forewarn you. He just does it. And he jumps here from, I shouldn't say jumps, but he moves here from anger to the problem of adultery. He's saying, remember, you have heard that the Old Testament taught this, but I say unto thee, and here's what he's going to say about that, verse 27, about adultery. Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. And that's exactly what the Old Testament says. To not commit adultery. And the Jewish rabbis were sticklers about that. They stuck with the law by the letter to the letter. And they said, adultery is a sin. But Jesus said, I want to go further. I want to explain. Again, I said it last time. Jesus is not disagreeing with the Word. He surely is not saying, well, no, the Old Testament said this, but I just want to tell you it's wrong. He's not saying that at all. What he's saying is the Old Testament says this, but you have misconstrued it, and you've misunderstood it, and you have misexplained it, or you got a mess, and here's what it really says. You have heard what the rabbi said, but they hadn't told you the exact truth. You have heard what the Jewish leaders have taught you, but they've misunderstood some things. The Old Testament did say, thou shalt not commit adultery. But verse 28 says, but I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. Remember what he's saying. The Jews said, this is a sin. Murder is a sin. But he said, I'm not just concerned about the fact of somebody committing a murder. Now I am, but I'm concerned about the anger in the heart that caused that person to commit murder. It's not just the fact that they killed somebody that was sin. It was the anger. The anger that led to the murder was sin. Now he's talking about adultery. And the Old Testament rabbis, these people who were supposed to know what the Lord said, adultery is sin. And that sounds pretty good. But Jesus said, I go further. And it's not just the fact, did somebody commit adultery? If they did, they sinned. If they didn't, they didn't sin. Jesus said, it goes further than that. He said, if a man looks on a woman and lusts after her, he has already in his heart committed adultery. Once again, Jesus says, it's more than the actual act. It's your heart. It's your thoughts. You have sinned already, says Jesus, even though you may not have gone through the actual act. And that's what he's saying. He's trying to get us to see again, it's not just the outward action, but the inward problem he's dealing with. Now, there's no doubt the Bible did talk about adultery. And adultery was wrong and is wrong. And then Jesus deals with that again in just a minute. But he's trying to get us to understand the inward sin I'm also concerned about. I wonder how many inward sins we have, even in our congregation, that hinders God from moving and working in our personal lives and in the church. And it's sins that you don't really see. It's sins that aren't really obvious because they're inside. Now, they are revealed, just like jealousy or envy or those type of things. See, they will be revealed somehow, but the inward sin that many times we can hide. We can hide from each other, but we can't hide from the Lord. He said, I just want to tell you, if you lust after her in your heart, you've already committed adultery. You have gone through the process, and you've already sinned. The sin of the heart. And then he turns to the lost people, verse 29. And if thy right hand offend, right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. For this is profitable for thee. For it is, I declare. And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. And if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee. For it is profitable that for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. Remember, he's talking to a group. Some are saved, some are lost. And he's doing exactly what I do. I preach on Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night. And I will say things that apply to saved people, and then right after that apply to somebody. I'll say something that applies to lost people. So what he's doing, and he talks about a person who is lost, who loves a particular sin so much that they won't give it up. And they love it so much they won't even give it up, even if they know they'll go to hell. They know if they get saved, they're going to have to give that sin up, and they love that sin so much. And Jesus said, if something you're looking at is keeping you from getting saved, pluck your eyeball out. It'd be a whole lot better to go through life without an eyeball. And you be saved and go to heaven, then because of the love for that sin you keep looking at, refuse to get saved and go to hell. And he talks about the right hand. And now, is Jesus speaking literally? Is he saying literally yank your eyeball out and literally cut your right hand off? Well, I surely don't think so. He's trying to make a point about the damage and danger of sin. I mean, really, if a man's looking at something, or a woman is looking at something they love so much, that they love it so much they won't give it up and they won't get saved because of it, plucking one eye out is not going to solve anything because they still have another eye to look at. Jesus is using a figure of speech. He is using a story here to show the importance of knowing that eternity is important. And dealing with sin is important. And no matter what sin, no matter how much a person loves it, it's not worth going to hell over. He said, you'd be better to pluck both eyes out. You'd be better to cut both hands off. And if that's what's keeping you from getting saved. Well, let's move on, verse 31. He deals with the law, Old Testament, and divorce. Verse 31, And it hath been said, once again, he's saying, you have heard. They have said, same things, different words. It hath been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. And he surely was right. Deuteronomy 24:1, I've got it in your notes, is the verse that he's probably referring to. Let's read it. When a man hath taken a wife and married her, and it come to pass that she find no favor in his eyes, because he hath, listen, because he hath found some uncleanness in her, then let him write her a bill of divorcement and give it to her in her hand and send her out of his house. Now, that's what the law said. That's what Moses eventually said. Now, that's not what God said to begin with. What he said to begin with is what we find in Genesis. A man shall leave his mother and father and shall cleave unto his wife, and they both shall be one. They two shall be one. That's God's desire. That's God's design. Was then, still is. I'll say it like this. God's not pleased with divorce. He's just not. God's will, God's plan has always been and always will be a man, a woman for a lifetime. But men are men and women are women. And during Moses' day, which when Deuteronomy was written, men were treating women like trash. Some of you women may say they were, or did you say past tense? Well, it was a lot worse than promise you. If a man got married, his wife didn't please him for whatever reason, get rid of her, get another one. And the key to the problem was in verse 1 of Deuteronomy 24. Let's read it again. When a man hath taken a wife and married her, and it come to pass that she find no favor in his eyes, but he hath found some uncleanness in her. Now, there was the problem. I'll be honest. Now, God did it right, and I'm not accusing God of doing wrong, but there's sometimes I wish he'd explain more of what he said in the Bible and what he meant. And this is one of those occasions that I think if he just explained it a little bit further, to be honest, he didn't have to. It's man's problem. Man wants his way, and that's why he tries to twist things from the Word to help him satisfy his desire. And that's what men did back then. There's some uncleanness. What does it mean? What did God mean? He says if a man marries a woman and he doesn't have any favor in his eyes for her, and she be found some uncleanness, and he's to write a bill of divorcement. What does that mean? Some said anything. Some uncleanness, God meant anything. If she doesn't please me exactly, get rid of her. Literally, some said, if she burns my breakfast, that's what God was talking about. That some uncleanness means anything she does, it doesn't please me exactly. And there were people men getting rid of wives. Because things like that. There were some who said that some uncleanness doesn't mean just any piddling thing, any insignificant things. What it means is unfaithfulness. If she has been unfaithful, if she has committed adultery with somebody else, then and only then you are to give her a bill of divorcement. Well, to be honest, they fussed about that and argued about that from Moses' day till Jesus' day. And Jesus is dealing with that. Even in Jesus' day, they're still arguing with about what does the Bible mean when it says uncleanness? What does God mean? Some said anything at all. If she doesn't satisfy your every whim, you can get rid of her. And God says it's okay. Well, I know for sure he didn't mean that. And Jesus is about to say that. And some said, even in Jesus' day, they're still saying, no, 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 that uncleanness is only unfaithfulness. And only unfaithfulness gives permission for a divorce. And that's what Jesus deals with. And he explains it further in verse 32. But I say unto you, verse 31, it hath been said, this is what you heard, but I say unto you, this is what I'm saying now. that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery, and whosoever shall marry her that is divorced committed adultery. So Jesus, if they would have accepted it, cleared up the problem. He cleared up the problem whether he accepted it or not. And he's cleared up our problem if we'll accept him. The answer to the question of Deuteronomy 21:4, what is that uncleanness? Jesus said one word, fornication, which means unfaithfulness. The word fornication, and if I do what I'm hoping to do, which it sure doesn't look too good right now, I'd like, when we get to 1 Corinthians, really go in detail about this fornication and adultery and all that. But for tonight, I'll just say this. Fornication is a word that means any sexual activity outside of marriage. That's committed, that act committed before anybody gets married. Fornication is used for that. That means if two married people, one of them commits that act with somebody other than their spouse, that word fornication is used for that. It's even used for homosexuality. So the word fornication simply means any kind of sexual activity outside of that bond of marriage. Any sexual activities between anybody other than husband and wife. He says, if anybody gets a divorce for any other reason than that, they're in error. Let's read it again. But I say to you that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery. And whosoever shall marry her that is divorced committeth adultery. Now, Jesus said, anyone that divorces for any other reason other than fornication, which means unfaithfulness, sexual unfaithfulness, the very act, not getting close to it, not the suspicion of it, not the possibility of it, but the proof of it. Anyone that gets a divorce other than for that reason is getting a divorce out of God's will, out of God's plan. And, of course, he's not for divorce anyway. He says, for any other reason, and he continues, if anybody marry her that is divorced to commit adultery. And the implication is this. Here's a married couple, and let's just say the man. We'll pick on the men tonight. The man gets tired of the wife and just says, I'm tired of you. Get out of here. I'm going to divorce you. And she hasn't committed adultery. She hasn't been unfaithful. She has not committed fornication. He is committing adultery by getting rid of her. And anybody who would marry him later on, anyone he would marry, he's committing adultery with her. Do you understand? Jesus gives one reason. I didn't even want to get stuck here. I wanted to save this for later. There's one reason, one permission given for a divorce, and that is fornication. And if there has not been that unfaithfulness, it has not been that adultery or fornication, the divorce is not sanctioned by the Lord. I don't even like using that word because, again, he's not for it. The reason, Jesus said later on, that the reason God allowed divorce was because of the hardness of the heart. Jesus, the Lord God, never wanted it, wasn't his desire. But to be honest, men were treating women so bad that he allowed divorce and demanded a written divorce to kind of protect the woman. Because all the woman had to do was look crooked and that husband get rid of him, get another one. So the Lord said, you're not doing that. I'm not going to let that happen. I'm going to protect that innocent lady. Or I'm going to protect the woman, whether she's really innocent or not. So it was because of the hardness of the heart. What's that mean? God said one man, one woman for a lifetime. Man didn't want that. Mankind didn't want that, man and woman. So God said, you may not follow my perfect example, but I want to tell you one thing. I'm going to protect that innocent party. Now, all that may be all jumbled up in your head, but we're going to move on anyway. Jesus moves on to the law and oaths or promises. Again, what he's saying is, you have heard the law and what the rabbis or the Pharisees and the scribes taught. You have heard it this way, but I want to tell you the right way. And he continues that thought with oaths or promises. Verse 33. Again, you have heard that it had been said of them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths. To forswear means to swear falsely or to say something and then not do it or to lie. He said, you have heard that it's wrong to forswear. It's wrong to say something and not be the truth. It's wrong to make a promise and not keep it. Verse 34, but I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Neither shall thou swear by the head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. And what he's saying is, the Jews once again just messed everything up. Now they knew the commandment that said, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. They knew that. So they knew they could not say, I swear, I say this to make a point. I don't even like saying it. I swear by the living God, this is true. Now they knew better than to say that. They knew they'd be violating the Lord and his scripture and his word and his will to do that. They knew enough about the Bible to know that that's not right. So what they do is say, I swear by Jerusalem, or I swear by the temple, or I swear by my child, or I swear by my own head. And Jesus said, don't you understand that the God that made everything made Jerusalem? And when you say, I swear by Jerusalem, you're swearing by something he made. And you say, I swear by the temple, don't you know that's his house? And you're swearing by his house, and when you swear by your own head, don't you know? What you say about your head's not going to change a thing. And Jesus said, I say, don't swear at all. And he goes on further in verse 37. But let your conversation be yea, yea, nay, nay, for whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. You know what he's saying? Don't go around saying, I swear by Jerusalem, I swear this, and I swear that. I don't even like saying that, but this is what he's saying. He's saying, if you're going to say yes, mean yes. If you're going to say no, mean no. He says, why do you have to swear by anything? Just tell the truth all the time. He said, you have heard that this is, it's okay to swear by Jerusalem. It's okay to, in other words, make a statement that makes it abundantly clear that you're really telling the truth this time. Jesus said, you don't got to do that if you tell the truth all the time. Tell the truth all the time. If you say yes, mean yes. If you say no, mean no. Verse 38, he deals with the law and the rights or retaliation. Let's read verse 38. You have heard that it had been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Somewhere in there's one of my mistakes. The law's dealing with an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. This deals with the Old Testament judicial system. They had a judicial system, kind of like ours. You break the law or break the rules, you go before the judge. And the law did say, an eye for an eye. In other words, if you on purpose put somebody's eye out, the judge has the right to say, okay, we're going to put your eye out. Judicial system. And if you knock somebody's tooth out because you get mad and swat them, we're going to swat you and knock your tooth out. And to be honest, that's kind of fair. That's what you call justice. I don't want it, but it's still fair. And Jesus said, that's what you've heard. You have heard that it had been said an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And that's exactly what they did. But the Jews, like with everything else, had moved this into a realm God never intended. The eye for an eye and the tooth for a tooth was for the judicial system. In other words, if you will, the judges and the court system. And it was, if you will, the justice system that was enacting this eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. Well, the Jews just put that into private conduct. And they said one-on-one, person-to-person, private conduct. You do me wrong, I got the right to do you wrong. You hit me, I got the right to hit you back. The law said eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. Well, Jesus said, that's not what it's all about. Look in verse 39. But I say unto you, that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. You talk about a bunch of shocked people, because they'd been taught all their life, take up for yourself. Somebody put your eye out, put their eye out. Somebody hit you, hit them back. Get them back, get even, get revenge. But that's not what the law ever said. It's not what God ever said. And he said, Jesus said, I'm saying, listen, don't resist evil. You talk about some confused listeners, but some dissatisfied listeners. They didn't want to hear this. By the way, we don't either. He said, don't resist evil. And he says, if somebody smites you on the right cheek, turn your other cheek and let them smite it. Well, that's contrary to our nature. That's contrary to their nature. You see, it wasn't just the pain of the smack, but to be slapped was an insult to a Jew. I mean, you talk about pride here. It was an absolute insult for somebody to come up and slap you. And now Jesus says, when they slap you on the right cheek, turn and let them slap you on the left cheek. That's not what they wanted to hear. That's surely not what they wanted to do, and neither do we. But that's what he said. Verse 40. Well, let me make a couple more comments before I go on. I'm afraid we're a lot like the people of Jesus' day. They were people who literally believed, I have a right to demand my rights. I have a right to stand up for myself, and if somebody wrongs me, I can wrong them back, and I am right to do it. They believed God gave them permission to do that. And I'm afraid that that's the thought of many people today, to demand our rights and stand up for ourselves. And we even say, if I don't stand up for myself, who will? Well, the answer is very clear. Jesus gives it. God will. God will take up for us. And that's the emphasis he's trying to make. That's what he's trying to get across to them and to us. You have a Father who's watching. You're a child of God. If somebody mistreats you, you think he doesn't see that? Do you think he's going to let someone mistreat his child and him not deal with them? And what he's saying is, instead of you striking back, just let your Father take care of it. Instead of you saying, I deserve this, I have a right, just let him take care of it. And that's exactly what he's saying today. And I know one thing, Jesus sure lived that principle. Jesus said, did like Isaiah 53, he came to the cross like a sheep before a slaughter and didn't utter a word. He lived the meek life that he admonishes us to live. Now look in verse 40. If a man will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. Well, the coat is the garment that's under the outer clothing. It's the undergarment, not underwear, but undergarment. It's also called a tunic. The coat is the undergarment, the cloak is the outer garment, and it's more expensive. And the law said that if you go to court because of a bill you owe, the person you owe has the right to demand your tunic or the coat, the undergarment that you wear. They have a right to demand that as a pledge. We would call it collateral. In other words, you give him or them the coat at least overnight until you pay the bill. But it also said, you cannot, the law cannot demand the cloak, the outer garment. And the reason is because the person who has been taken to court, who has already had to give up their coat, the under part, if they had to give up the cloak, the outer part, they're liable to freeze that night. Because most people, that's all they had. So the law protected the person. Jesus said, somebody takes you to court and they demand your coat like the law says they have the right to. He said, go ahead and take your cloak off and give that to you, to them too. He's saying, here's what he's saying, go the extra mile, go overboard. That's literally what he's saying. Verse 41, look at it. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. The Romans of that day had the right. Whatever they desired, whatever, whenever they wanted to, they just grab a citizen and say, here, you carry my load. You carry my armor. You carry this load. They had the right to demand of a citizen to make them carry the load, at least for 1 mile. Jesus said, if somebody demands that you carry their load for 1 mile, go two. It's a completely foreign message of what they're used to. And that's exactly what he's saying. You have heard, but I am saying. And the message of the New Testament, the message of grace, the message of mercy is certainly different. But he's trying to say this, and I'll quit in a minute. He's trying to say, go the extra mile. Go what you might consider overboard. And I thought about this, and this is exactly what he's saying. What if that's what we did today? What if the Christian business person went overboard to give a Christian testimony? Went overboard, did more than what they were required, did more than what was necessary. And the customers would say, really? You going to do this? What if the Christian owner, business owner, went overboard? What if the Christian worker at a plant went overboard, went more, did more than what was expected, where the employer would say, I can't believe that fella. I can't believe that lady. I mean, they're different than anybody here. What if they went overboard? What, and that's what Jesus is saying. He's saying, here's what he's saying. There's something more important than your rights. There's something more important than your comfort. There's something more important than you getting your way. And it is this, your testimony. And that Roman soldier, as mean as he is, and making you carry a load when it's, you really just, he shouldn't be able to do that. He does it anyway. Show him some Christian attitude. Instead of carrying it 1 mile and being mad about it the whole way, and mumbling under your breath and looking up at him with mean eyes, and he knows you don't like it and he don't care. He knows you're a man. He don't care. He's glad you don't care. You're mad to be honest. Instead of that, take it 2 miles and with a tender heart and tender eyes. Make that Roman soldier say, well, what's that person got? What is it about them? And hear what he's saying? You have heard, but I'm telling you this. He's saying there's some things in this world more important than us getting our way or getting our rights, or there's something more important than us getting the best end of the deal, and that is our Christian testimony. And sometimes living a Christian life costs you. When you go 2 miles instead of one, it's harder. When you give both garments instead of one, it hurts. When you go overboard, it's not easy, but there's a Christian testimony. And somebody saw and somebody heard. And what you did in that lost person's life will be worth what you suffer. Well, let's just stop here.